Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC World Service, the business podcast which brings you the trends, the money and the people who make the world and its money go round. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Manuela Zaragoza, and this Business Daily comes to you from one of London's few remaining medieval churches, St. Olaf's, near the Tower of London. Why here? Well, it's all about this sculpture, which several years ago was at the heart of an art theft scandal.
He's a rather serious-looking fellow with a beard and an Elizabethan ruff and a rather gorgeous red tunic with his hands held in prayer before him.
The theft of Dr. Peter Turner's statue from St. Olaf's highlighted the murky world of stolen and looted art and antiques.
They say, now that I know I have a looted work of art in my possession, how much are you going to pay me? You know, what's the reward? What do I get?
That's coming up here on Business Daily. First, the statue of Dr. Peter Turner was in St. Olaf's for 326 years. It survived the Great Fire of London, even the Blitz of London in World War II. Then, for 70 years, it went missing.
For many decades, there was simply a space here. The memorial had been lost, and now we have it here in all its magnificence, and we can't be more thrilled. I'm Penny Ritchie Calder. I'm one of the church wardens at this historic church of St. Olaf's. He was buried here and worshipped in this church. He was a doctor, a physician, he was an MP in several of Elizabeth I's parliaments, and a renowned botanist. So he was a man of many parts. And the memorial was installed here in 1615, the year after his death.
And how long have you had him back here?
He was reinstated in 2012 after an absence of over 70 years. The church was badly bombed in the Second World War in 1941. And in the chaos of that bombing, the memorial disappeared. We assume that somebody made off with it.
So what did it feel like when you heard that it had been located and there was a possibility that it might be coming back to its home?
Well, it was all completely out of the blue. We suddenly had a call from a curator at the Museum of London who had been looking through auction catalogues and had spotted a photograph and a description of this memorial and thought, well, why is this up for sale? It clearly has a relationship to the Church of St. Olaf. That started a whole ball rolling with many different individuals involved.
It wasn't easy getting it back, was it?
It was a very convoluted series of negotiations. It was tortuous, there's no other word for it. But a real detective story, trying to work out how it had ended up in the hands of a dealer. But ultimately, everybody did the right thing and we're thrilled that the empty space is now filled with this amazing monument. We are just truly grateful to those who helped find it, recover it, negotiate, and install it back here in its rightful place.
I contacted the auction house at the request of the church. I negotiated with the possessor, the dealer, and several dealers behind him where they got the piece and how to get it back to the church.
That's Chris Marinello, one of the people who played a key role in returning the stolen sculpture to St. Olaf's Church in London. He's the CEO of Art Recovery International, the man to call when artwork goes missing. He's even been dubbed the Sherlock Holmes of art looted by the Nazis.
With a lot of arm twisting and a little bit of threatening litigation, we managed to convince the possessor to voluntarily give it back to the church.
But I can imagine that the people whose arms you're twisting are very, very reluctant.
That's right.
I mean, do they know most of the time that they are in possession of stolen artwork?
They knew it was dodgy. Okay, they claimed that they bought the piece from a UK dealer who was specializing in sculpture, when in fact we discovered that this dealer was actually arrested for smuggling cocaine inside of sculptures. And it was the threat of a BBC story, they were covering it at the time, that convinced this dealer to relinquish the sculpture.
But it's a significant loss, presumably, of money on the dealer's side.
Well, you know what? Money really didn't change hands. They traded things amongst themselves to get the piece up to a value of about £50,000, which is what they demanded before they voluntarily released the work. But we refused to pay them. I try to beat them down with the law and morality to return the object without demanding some sort of payment.
And what works best?
A mixture of both. It depends who you're dealing with. I mean, I've dealt with some pretty feisty people where the only resort is going to the court system. But that's always the last resort.
Why is it always the last resort?
Because it's expensive, time-consuming, embarrassing to the dealers and to collectors that their name becomes public. And there are a lot of judges that don't know Picasso from their elbow. So it's something we try to avoid.
And when you say you twist arms, I'm just trying to imagine that kind of conversation, how that works.
We're the art world fixers. People come to us and say, look, I've got something that I know is stolen. I don't want to be arrested. I don't want my name in the paper. I want to cooperate and get rid of it. Can you help me? And we are asked to keep things out of the press in exchange for cooperation, which is something we can offer.
So going to the press is one of your ways of arm twisting.
I hate to say it, we use it as a weapon sometimes.
Name and shame, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, there are people who are well-heeled individuals, bold-faced names, that have stolen and looted works of art in their collections, and they do not want to be named.
There must be loads of pieces out there that you would like to see recovered.
Of course.
What's top of your list?
Well, I represent the heirs of the dealer Paul Rosenberg, whose gallery was looted by Hermann Goering himself in Paris in 1940. There are over 60 top paintings missing since 1940. And I know where some of them are. I know where one of them is right now in Switzerland. And there's a very uncooperative dealer in Hamburg. I would like to get that piece back.
So in that particular case, why is that dealer refusing to cooperate? And why have your threats not worked?
Well, he sold it to his client. So he knows he's on the hook for the money. If his client has to give up the painting, he's going to have to reimburse a significant amount of money. That's why he doesn't want to cooperate. It's all about greed. It's all about money. There are hundreds of thousands of Nazi-looted works of art still out there in the marketplace. Perhaps 600,000-700,000 objects, and not all top Picassos and Degas, but you know, Torah scrolls and other important religious objects that are just gone.
So, is the art world, do you think, doing enough to stop this?
Well, you can find a lot of people to come in here and praise the big auction houses. People are afraid to criticize them because they are so powerful. But I'm not one of those people. The major auction houses maintain restitution departments to make sure that Nazi-looted works of art are researched and then funneled through the auction house so that they can earn commissions on sale. The auction houses help facilitate deals between victims and possessors of Nazi-looted works of art so that they can sell it through the auction house.
So they've got a vested interest to keep it going.
Of course they do.
Chris Marinello. That may be, but the auction house Christie's did help Sylvie Sulitzer. Sylvie describes herself as just a French woman living somewhere in the south of France.
Her grandfather, though, was Alfred Weinberger, a prominent art collector in pre-war Paris. In fact, he was such a respected authority that during the war, the Nazi general Hermann Göring wanted to employ Mr. Weinberger to verify the artwork he'd looted. Weinberger refused, and so the Nazis pilfered his art collection too. But last month, after 70 years, a painting from his collection, Two Women in a Garden by Renoir, was finally returned to Sylvie by Christie's in New York.
The artwork was in a safe at the Morgan Bank, and that's where the Nazis stole them. Most of them were found after the war. There were still a few paintings missing. Five Renoir, including the one I received back in New York.
Were you aware that this one particular painting had been missing all along?
No, never. I never heard about this story. The war was a taboo subject. I supposed that when my grandfather died, he would never expect we could find his paintings so long afterwards. And he died, I was 15, so I was very young and I had no idea about what happened. And I discovered many things after my mother died. Now, I must say that I've got thousands of questions. Well, and it's only 5 or 6 years ago that I was told that there were paintings that belonged to my grandfather.
What did it must have been quite a shocking revelation.
Yes, it was a huge shock. And after a few weeks, I've been told that the FBI was investigating on the property of this painting, and the American government decided that it's your painting, so they're going to give it back to you. So I was, yes.
And you did not even know that it belonged to you. I mean, has it made you more curious to go and look at what other looted property there is that belonged to your grandfather?
Well, we know actually about the five other paintings. But I've got an everyday life, and honestly, I'm not living with that kind of idea. I think I'm already been very lucky to get one back.
But you can't keep it, can you? You can't keep this particular painting.
Unfortunately not, because the French government compensated for the paintings. So as I have it back, I have to give the government the money back.
Which means you have to sell the painting to raise the money to do that.
Exactly, yes, yes.
I mean, quite disappointing for you. I mean, so keeping it in your family is no longer an option, even though it's been returned to you.
No, it's not an option, unfortunately. Of course, I would have loved to keep it because it's a huge symbol for me and my family. But that's life.
Sylvie Sulitzer. The painting had been on a 70-year odyssey from South Africa to London through Switzerland and New York before a gallery called Park West in Florida bought it from Sotheby's. Park West in turn sold it to a private collector, and when it transpired it was Nazi-looted art, it says it promptly compensated that buyer. But the gallery is now in turn seeking compensation from Sotheby's, with no luck so far. Paul Schwepp is the lawyer for Park West Gallery.
Sotheby's was selling it at auction, so they can try and obtain their relief from whoever gave the piece to them. But the idea that it's Park West that should, you know, suffer the financial loss when we acquired it in good faith from Sotheby's, they represented the provenance of the piece to be unblemished and without question. Park West paid good value for the piece. So everything about Park West transaction with Sotheby's was arm's length in good faith, where Park West would have had no notice, no knowledge. There wasn't any red flag whatsoever that would have clued Park West into the fact that this was actually stolen from the Weinberger family by the Nazis.
Is there not a database somewhere that tells you which pieces of art are stolen or considered, you know, suspect in some way?
Thankfully, there is. Unhelpfully, the database did not list this piece in 2009.
Is that a common occurrence? I mean, does it happen quite a lot that you come across pieces by famous artists who you kind of wonder where it came from?
No, no, it's unusual. And it's my understanding that the Weinberger heirs only became active after 2010.
So presumably Sotheby's will say the same thing. It was not listed on any database. So how are they to know?
Yeah, presumably. Their relationship to the piece goes back to at least 1975. looks like it sold through a Sotheby's auction in March of 1975 in London. And then it sold again through Sotheby's in December 1975 in Johannesburg. So they certainly have a much longer relationship with this piece. What they knew, when they knew it, that's for them to answer, not us. But our view is quite simple. They sold us a piece that was stolen, and so therefore they should reimburse us the purchase price, just as we did.
Lawyer Paul Schwepp. Sotheby's told us they did offer to reimburse Park West Gallery for that Renoir. But the art auction house says Park West Gallery refused that offer and that it's linked compensation to other items it's purchased. Lucien Simmons is worldwide head of restitution at Sotheby's. His department dealt with that particular looted Renoir.
There was a document that mentioned this work as having been looted from the Weinberger family in Paris during World War II. But that document misdescribed the painting as a landscape with a woman sitting down. And of course, now we look at the painting which we're talking about and we realise it's not a single woman sitting down, but it's two women sitting down. And it also has different dimensions to the painting that the Weinbergers listed as missing. So they made two material mistakes which actually made it impossible to match up the painting which was offered for sale by Christie's, by Sotheby's, and by an auction house in Switzerland several times over the years,
surely to a
with the picture which had been stolen.
Sure, but to a trained eye, someone who studied Renoirs, it seems like such a small technicality whether or not there's one woman or two women.
It would seem so from the point of view of common sense, but Renoir was a wonderful artist, but he was also prolific. And there are really a very large number of landscapes, all of which are slightly different. And there was basically no flag to suggest that this is the painting which the Weinbergers lost.
Does Sotheby's ever profit from restitutions? For example, do you earn fees from auctions to provide cash reimbursement to the true owners?
We're a commercial organisation, but one of the things I tell my colleagues when we're pushing them to do more and more research on paintings is the best way to lose a client is to expose them to an adverse title claim from the World War II era. So we make enormous efforts to protect our clients and to basically protect the market by doing the research before paintings are offered for sale.
Sure, but does Sotheby's lose money when it has to restitute artworks like this?
I can't generalise, but certainly where we find a situation where a painting was dislocated in World War II, as a matter of policy, we try to bring the various parties together. And it's not a question of profit, it's a question of trying to do the right thing and to be a facilitator to a settlement, however one gets there.
Lucien Simmons at Sotheby's. And what about the victims? Even though it took 70 years for Sylvie Sulitzer to recover a painting the Nazis looted from her grandfather, she's just happy that it has finally been returned. So I leave the last word to her. From me, Manuela Zaragoza, and today's producer, Lawrence Knight, Business Daily is back again at the same time on Monday.
You know, I have had the most beautiful gift I could have is the justice for my family. That's the main thing. The painting, I've seen it. It's in my heart forever. And what happened in New York is also in my heart and in my mind till the end of my life. And that's very precious. There are things you will never buy with money.
We meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
People Fixing the World is the podcast looking for solutions to the problems we face today.
It could potentially ease the suffering of millions.
We meet people with smart ideas to discover how they might change the world for the better.
And this is a fairly cheap and easy way to get lots more solar capacity into the middle of cities.
People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service.
We have a solution. Let's do it.
Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.